Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here, another program of Two Guys with Heart. Me and my very good friend,
Dave Colonen.
Dave, we have a good one for our listeners today. We usually have a pretty good one, but I don't know, for something, when we start talking about the life of Jesus and the impact that he was preaching and how that impacts our lives today, boy, it just means a lot more to me.
Well, you get me in on the... that kind of information, I'm jumping at the chance.
You are, and that's another reason why I like doing that, because you really have some powerful input. We're going to talk a little bit about finances today. You know, there's a whole lot of scripture in the Bible about money, and what did Jesus say about it? Well, I want to take a look at some of those issues and see if we can't come up with something that's solid to benefit our listeners. There's some incredible secrets that Jesus had in the scriptures. Jesus visited people where they worked. That was one of his secrets. Jesus was so interested in their work that he instructed them as how to right time to drop their fishing nets to catch fish. Remember that the disciples had enough confidence in Jesus' knowledge that they went ahead and dropped their nets again.
They've been fishing all night, and they still said, well, if Jesus said it, I better do it. That's right. A good line, isn't
it? That's a good line. I think so.
How many people ignore that and say, I'll still do it on my own?
That's it. Yep. You got the idea, Dave. That's where we're headed with this. You know, those disciples caught more fish that night than they ever had caught, ever. And in fact, they caught so many fish, it broke their nets. Their success was so remarkable, they had to have partners to help pull in the fish.
Hey, let me tell you a story about that.
Okay, good.
You remember the guy from Alaska that came here?
Mark Jones.
Yeah.
Austin Jones. I remember him well.
Okay, he went to the furthest place from here, over 3,000 miles, up in...
Nome, Alaska.
Yep. Okay. When he got there, he was so new, and everybody said, it's a little town, 4,000 people. Yep. And he came to pastor the dead church. There's nobody in it, two people. And they all watching him like hawks. Well, they all, on a Saturday, they go out and they make a big hole in the ice. Mm-hmm. Big enough that the whole town can bring their little hook on a string and put it in there.
And fish.
And fish. Well, nobody's catching anything, so the pastor went out there, and Austin went out there, and he said, can I put my line in here too? He said, oh, sure, come on, you're the preacher. The preacher's putting the line in. In 30 minutes, nobody got a bite, and he caught 40 fish.
They all went to church the next day, didn't they?
They said, this is God's man. I mean, he comes out here, and he throws his line in, and they all wanted to buy the hook. They all wanted to buy everything he had. We'll pay you for it.
That's a good story. I didn't know that one.
Oh, that's precious.
He caught 40 fish to their zero.
That's precious. He was feeling so good. And then he could have sold everything he had for big bucks.
Yeah, he could have made a handsome profit. That's right.
And, you know, the church is running over 150 now.
Is that right?
Yes, doing great.
Why, he's been up there, what, about 2 years now? Something like that?
Yeah, it might be that. And he found a youth pastor.
Did he?
A young kid. When he was traveling around Pennsylvania, he found a youth pastor, and they took him up there. And so he is latched on to helping all the youth. And they're excited about it. And so, boy, you know, it's contagious what happens when the Lord begins to work.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this was a story that you just talked about.
Yes.
You know that story went around that area big time. People talked about that.
Sure.
Said, look, man, Jesus had so many fish in the disciples' boats. He gave other boats that came in there.
Yeah.
You know, they're big.
That's right.
supply.
Yes.
And look, 2,000 years later, we're still talking about it, you and me.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought about the other one.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You said there are going to be seven secrets that Jesus used.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. There's a time to drop your net.
That's right.
Okay.
That is the right time. Well, when we go back to that story, remember when the disciples saw the incredible knowledge and concern and results of following Jesus' instruction, they realized how sinful they had been and how limited they were. Well, that opened their eyes, just like your friend with Austin Jones. They brought their ships to land and decided to totally follow Jesus and his teachings. Do you think that same thing happened to the congregation in Nome, Alaska?
You betcha.
When, our friend, Reverend Mr. Jones, brought in those fish. Jesus took the time to show his disciples where to get the money to pay their taxes. Remember the story? He says, "Go thou to the sea and cast a hook and take up the fish that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. And take and give unto them for me and thee." Matthew chapter 17, verse 27. Remember reading that? There was money in the mouth of the fish. These are the facts. You know, Jesus showed people where money could be found. He motivated them to try again and consider options and changes. He focused their minds on their true source, the Heavenly Father. He encouraged them to make spiritual matters a priority. Then he encouraged them to look at their giving as a seed given in faith to reap the promise of a hundredfold harvest. And that's what we all want, isn't it? He encouraged them to expect a harvest from everything they sowed into God's work by helping set others free. That's what Jesus was trying to accomplish. If there is one thing more exciting than discovering financial freedom God's way, it is helping others discover his plan for financial freedom. Jesus did that, and we should too. What do you think, David? Is that a financial seed that we could plant and mimic the actions of Jesus and follow his lead?
Well, it's so important to realize that those guys pulled their boats in when that Jesus did and followed him and listened to him preach. They would have probably never even wanted to go that way or listen at all. So there's many ways to win people to the Lord.
That's it.
And when you do the right thing, God brings people right into your household and you begin to preach the gospel yourself. Once you're a preacher, you're always a preacher.
Yes. Yes.
I've been here 5 years with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're becoming a preacher.
Yes. Yes. Well, yes.
How many times are you preaching on Sunday? You're preaching a lot out there that people are contacting you to say, hey, please.
Yes, I have been doing that, yes. Mm-hmm. This week I'm teaching, not preaching, this Sunday coming. But I do both. But you're right, I'm learning. Yes.
Well, I like that.
Yes.
When Jesus took the time to show his disciples where to get the money to pay their taxes.
That's right. Isn't that
to pull out money out of a fish's mouth.
It's heartwarming.
No wonder they followed him. No wonder the crowd gathered.
That's right.
I mean, they had thousands of people. This just wasn't 100 people that came. Their crowds were 15,000, 20,000 people.
Yeah, that's right.
And Jesus, I've been to the Holy Land. I went out to the place where Jesus stood at the bottom of the hill, and then you know how your voice goes up?
Yeah.
And I stood there just, it hasn't changed. I stood in the same place Jesus did.
Wow.
We all wanted to. Our whole gang wanted to.
With the Sermon on the Mount? Is that what you're talking about?
Where Jesus gave that by Capernaum, he did a lot of places. And every time we'd come to a place where Jesus would be teaching the people, we'd sing a song.
Wow.
So we got to be singers in Israel. Mm-hmm. We went on a 10-day trip, and we sang every day. Every place we stopped, people would yell out, "Sing, sing, sing!"
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Oh, my. That'd be quite a ministry, yes.
We accomplished a lot, and that took us back. We went to Israel 8 times.
8 times you were there?
8 times. And we took over 100 people every time with us. And Those were wonderful days. I haven't thought about that for years, but when you live as long as I've lived and do as much as we did,
yes,
it all comes back a little at a time, just enough to give you a blessing and and a memory that says, wow, wasn't that great?
That's right. That's right. That is a wow. To be able to say you were in Israel on 8 separate occasions, that's a wow. I have never been there.
Yeah, we went through baptisms.
Yeah.
I've been baptized in the Jordan River 8 times. After I was done baptizing all the people,
yeah,
I said, hey, one of you guys that are preacher, come baptize me.
Yeah.
Those are fun days.
Oh, yes.
I mean, one day I woke up and it was snowing in Israel.
Snowing in Israel.
It was a rare day.
Sure.
And I looked out the window and there it was snowing. No, it wasn't bad. It was just, you know, enough flakes to make it, but I knew it was cold.
Yeah.
And I knew that was the day we were going to the Jordan River and baptize people. And I said that my said to Judy, I'm not going down there in that cold water. That'd be crazy. Yeah. Snowing outside, you want me to baptize people?
Yeah.
There were 80 people wanting to get baptized in the Jordan. So when I got on the bus, I said to the people, hey, we canceled the baptism.
Oh, what'd they say to that? Thank you.
Hey, we spent all that money. We want to be baptized in the Jordan, and you're doing it, and it's today.
Wow.
I never forgot that one either.
Yeah, you did it, huh?
Yes.
I take it you did it.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's good. You know, Jesus never allowed others to change his opinion of himself. It sounds like you fall into that same category. You didn't allow others to alter your opinion of what's going on and who's going on. You know, nobody really knows you. Consider this for a moment, Dave. Almost everyone in your life is more preoccupied with themselves than they are with you. Therefore, you know more about yourself than anyone who will ever meet you. Never forget this. It is not what men say about you that really matters in life. It's what you believe about yourself. Jesus was slandered. He was falsely accused. They said he was possessed with devils. Countless accusations were hurled like stones against Jesus every day of his life, but it never affected him. Blessed are ye when ye men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice ye in the day, and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in like manner did their father unto the prophets. I read that from Luke chapter 6, verse 22 and 23. You see, Jesus knew what he was really about. He believed in himself. He believed in his product. He knew his accusers were ignorant and unlearned and arrogant. And he knew that they simply feared him. People always fight what they do not understand. The mind will always resent what it cannot master. Wars are fought because of ignorance and fear. Throughout human history, champions have had their names soiled and stained. Accusations and slanderous lies have come against great political leaders as well as ministers. This is life. It's just the way it is. Daniel was accused of breaking the law. Joseph was falsely accused of raping his employer's wife. Paul was accused of arousing mobs through hatred and divisions concerning the belief system of religious people. Jesus never begged anyone to believe him. He knew that integrity cannot be proven. It must be discerned. He never wasted time with critics. He kept his attention on his goal. He stayed focused. They accused Jesus of being filled with devils. He paid no attention. He simply continued to cast out devils. Matthew chapter 12, verse 24 says just that. Jesus never strived to look good. He simply was good. He did not labor to appear truthful. He was truthful. He never struggled to have a good reputation. He had a good character. Every successful person wants to be loved and admired. But your enemies and critics will never leave your reputation unstained and untarnished. You must rise above that fact. You must never allow what others say about you to change your personal opinion of yourself. Never. Jesus didn't do it. We shouldn't either. There's a lot to be said about that. You have any strong feelings in that subject, Dave? You'd like to share with us? You usually have some very wise words about the character and integrity of an individual and how steadfast we have to stay and don't let other people bring us down to their level.
Well, you got to do it by faith. The Bible teaches us that. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house.
Yeah,
I have a huge desire to go to Kentucky where they have built an actual ark.
Oh, I heard about that. Supposed to be to scale and everything.
Yes, yes. Unbelievable. Yeah. So there's something wonderful about going and being able to see what that's why a revival does so good, because things happen. We bring an evangelist, and he prays for the sick, and somebody gets healed, and next night the church is full, and that's how the gospel is preached.
That's right.
Well, Noah preached for 120 years.
Did he?
You know how many converts?
No, I don't. There can't be very many.
None. Not even one.
Oh, my.
Built for 120 years. He went out in the desert and started building to spec.
Yeah.
Took him 25 years to build the first floor. Because he didn't know anything about building.
No, I can believe that.
And then it took him another 25 years to put the second floor on. And when he got to 100, he had put the roof on and made enough room for every animal to be in a cage so they wouldn't fight each other, because it's going to be a long time. Uh-huh. He had to have another area where food could be brought for 2 years, enough food for 2 years, if everything, you know, went.
Yeah, right.
So they had to be back out of that boat in 2 years. But that's a long time.
And that's a long time.
And they had to do all that. They had to do all that preparation.
Yeah.
God said, okay, Noah, go inside the ark and stay there. I'm going to shut the door. And for 7 days, we are going to just sit. And then at the seventh day, the rain will begin. But that last day, after preaching 120 years, the people laughed at him.
Yeah.
And even after 120 years, they scoffed and said, Noah,
yeah,
get in your boat and get out of here. We're through with you. We're tired of you telling us it's going to rain. Where is it? Where's the rain for 120 years?
Yep.
And after 7 days sitting in there quietly with everybody, pitter-patter on the roof. Yeah. And What's that? We haven't heard that sound. What is that? That's rain. And then, water came from everywhere, bubbled up out of the springs.
Yeah.
And finally, it floated.
Yep.
And my, what an amazing, how'd I get into that?
Well, you were talking about Noah, and I think that's good. I think we ought to take a bus trip down there. I'll go with you to Kentucky.
Hey,
we'll
listen,
take our ladies, and off we'll go.
You know, the Jacobs brothers are in the middle of going this fall, and they got 4 busloads.
No kidding.
Right.
I didn't know that.
And they are leaving in October, next month.
Wow.
And I just had friends come in from Canada, and they had just been there, and they were on fire.
Yeah,
they controlled the conversation. Said, "Dave, you got to go down to Noah's Ark in Kentucky. It'll be the greatest move of your life."
Yeah, that would be something to see.
Oh, maybe next year, maybe fall.
All right, yeah.
We plan around that.
Yeah,
this is where dreams come true.
Oh, that's
it starts right here at the microphone.
It starts right here in the production studio. Timing and preparation. That's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
The next subject.
So did I interrupt that?
No, you're stimulating some thoughts.
Right on.
Because I think timing and preparation is a big deal. Champions, you see, never hurry. Did you ever notice that, Dave? The quality of preparation determines the quality of performance. Great concert pianists invest hundreds of hours of practice before the concert. They know that the quality of those many grueling hours of practice will prepare them for their greatest performance. The world champion heavyweight boxer knows he cannot get into the ring with his opponent without preparing first. It would be too late. For many weeks before the great fight, he toils in the morning workout. He's running, he's exercising, he's jogging, he's punching the bag. Champions do not become champions in the ring. They are merely recognized in the ring. Their becoming happens in their daily routine. Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you, to prepare. You see, Jesus never hurried, and Jesus was well prepared. Jesus did not begin his earthly ministry until he was 30 years old. His ministry was a short 3.5 years. His preparation time was 30 years. Jesus was very sensitive about timing. When his mother told him that the people had run out of wine at the marriage of Cana, he replied, "Woman, what have I to do with thee? My hour is not yet come." John chapter 2, verse 4. Obviously, God was planning a public introduction to Jesus' ministry. But Jesus saw a need and responded to the faith Mary expressed when she said, "Whatsoever so he saith unto you, do it." John chapter 2, verse 5. Something good is happening every moment of your life. Something is growing bigger. It may be the seed of patience or a new friendship just birthed. It might be the weakness of your plans are now being revealed. Whatever it is, each season is producing some special result from your effects. Several years ago, a friend of mine had just entered a business. He was so excited about his remarkable potential. However, he did not want to spend time learning how to present the plan to others. He felt it was just too detailed. As I watched him stumble over and over in his conversation with others, I finally said to him, "Learn the business. Study your product. Take time to learn the details. If you will take the time to prepare your presentation, you will have a believable product. The people will have confidence in becoming a part of your business. You may not learn all of the details in your first night where you hear them, but don't worry. Set aside a few hours each week and begin to study your own presentation for your business. Preparation time is never wasted time. That's the point I'm trying to make here. It will take time to know your business. It will take time to know your product. It will take time to develop a list of customers and clients that you might want to serve. Think about the life of Jesus. He saw hundreds around him die because of sickness and disease, but his time had not come. He saw thousands warped with the tradition and legalism of religious systems, but he knew his Father was growing him up. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. You see, Jesus was willing to wait. He was preparing himself some 30 years. Isn't that a fascinating thought, David? That Jesus was willing to wait that long. He had to know, and his family had to know. His mother and father knew, certainly his cousin, aunt knew, that he was the Savior. They all knew it. They knew it before he was even born. Yet he waited 30 years. He had to have it right. He had to be well prepared. He had to think it through. I think that's a fascinating thought process that we should be able to get out of studying the Scriptures, particularly Luke chapter 2.
Well, sometimes people think they have to start big.
Yeah.
Have to start really small.
Have to start small as well.
And I learned that in the Couriers. We started small. We moved to Pennsylvania, had 10, 15 people coming to our services because they never heard of gospel music. We were the first to come to this state. And it took us a long time, 9 or 10 years before we ever brought about success to our team.
That's so wonderful. So you know what this is all about, the subject of
preparation. You got to start small.
Yes.
If we thought we could start with 1,000 people, it would have been easy. But
yeah,
now,
that's not how it works.
Right. Jesus knows how to fix us.
That's wonderful. David, well, I could go on with these subjects all afternoon, but we've exhausted our time. There's that little clock on the wall says it's time for us to say goodbye. But my, oh my, what powerful lessons we've had today studying about the life of Jesus. I hope we can continue some of this thought process again in the near future. But until then, for now, this is Gift Briner saying bye-bye.
I enjoyed it. Enjoyed being with you, Gift. God bless you so much, and you have listened to us today. Dave Clonan here. Bye-bye.